You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
Is Matt? Damn right. Soundtrack off of Game of Thrones season 6 from this episode 10, this last season finale. Light of the Seven, this is called. And when I got back, when we first got back from California, and we landed on Sunday night, landed at 10:30 at JFK, and I dropped off Derek and Tom. And there was so much traffic over the Whitestone, and there's so much traffic heading toward, like, toward the tolls in New Rochelle on I-95. And I just wanted to be home so bad. You know, I'd say I hadn't seen Lauren in days, and I just wanted to be home. And, of course, the rest of the country had already seen Game of Thrones. And, dude, when I sat down, Lauren, you know, we said our hellos and all that stuff, and I ate a little bit. We were talking, updated her, and whatever. She went to bed because she had already seen it. You watched it with her. And I heard that Jess left. Oh my God, she left right in the beginning because of Grandmeister Pycelle when he got stabbed to death by all the little children. I heard that turned her off. So she didn't even stick around to see the explosion, the wildfire. Dude, and everybody at home, if you have, I was sitting in front of the TV, like this. I had hands over my, there's so much, and this music, right starting off, I said something is very, very different. This is going to be very, very wild, because Lauren said, I watched the episode already. She goes, and I said, oh, leave, get out of the room. She started laughing. I saw in her face something had happened, but as soon as I heard this music...
Yeah, King Leonidas' wife fucking took care of business.
Dude, it was over. In fact, there are quite a few articles that have been written about this composition in particular. I think we're going to bring it up on tonight's Zaraza New York. It's from the Huffington Post. Game of Thrones composer breaks down the season finale's opening sequence, which the first 20 minutes is one of the most compelling 20 minutes that has ever been broadcast on HBO. And we're talking about the network that hosted The Sopranos. Okay, this is unbelievable how this built up, and I'm so happy to have it in the work playlist now, so... Check it out. And if you haven't watched the series yet, get on it. What the hell are you waiting for? You know? So, in either case, call in at any time tonight. I just want to chill out a little bit. Last night was a little fiery. It was fun. Just to recap what we did last night, we talked about hate crimes and terrorism, you know, especially led by terrorism, the fight against terrorism led by figures like political hacks such as Loretta Lynch. We talked about how hate crimes actually do protect minorities from crime. Only thing is that it's protecting them a little bit more now from terrorism, since even our enemies out there are now saying, hey, listen, these fucking Americans are so unbelievably crazy They're so crazy that just make sure that you're killing white people so at least they don't start with the whole hate crime shit and they actually acknowledge it as what it is, us, and what we are, you know? So imagine that. These fucking Americans. What else did we do? Oh, yeah, the president, he was speaking about Turkey, pretty much gave the whole ISIS is losing, which is why they're winning speech. Or ISIS is winning, which is why they're now losing something, mixing it up, trying to convince himself that something's going right when he's the most ineffectual man I've ever seen stand in front of a television camera. John Kerry, we talked about him. Another idiot. Another person using that whole Dash stuff, Daesh. I know we have friends in the chat room. Gadget Doc, he's number one, saying using Daesh is actually a lot better because it's an insult. It pretty much means goat fucker. I don't care if it means goat fucker who then rolls in the excrement of the cow next to the goat in post-sex bliss and then smokes a cigarette dipped in formaldehyde. I don't care what the hell what it's called. Okay? It could be the most offensive thing in the world. The problem is that when you go and you commit to using Daesh, whatever, all these people, they're trying to divert all the attention away from using ISIS, ISIL. I bet you any money the president was like, oh man, I wish I had used Daesh back then. I didn't use the whole ISIL thing. Because it still has Islamic in there, and I really got to get off of this. It was probably in a backdoor meeting somewhere people are like, okay, well, listen, we have to slowly start incorporating this Daesh thing into the narratives here. So who wants to be the first one to use it exclusively? And melted candle wax face, John Kerry went, I'll do it. That's what he did. Face like melted candle wax. Where you know, you always know it's him speaking because it sounds like a man that's speaking through a really cheap Halloween mask. You can tell that he doesn't have a lot of control of his face anymore and he's kind of like talking through the face instead of with the face. So in any of the case, those were the three of the things that we did yesterday. And that's about it. There are other things too, but I don't want to spend a lot of time on the social experimentation that continues to happen with the U.S. military and the lifting of the ban, to the ceremonial lifting of the ban today on transgendered soldiers. I don't want to talk about it. Anybody with any kind of military background that wants to talk about it, go ahead. But whatever. Social experimentation just continues. Social experimentation continues with the one group in this nation that should have remained macho and ready to kill. That's all it's there for, defense. But we're providing funding for sex change operations, and that's going to be on the table, even though the VA is actively on. The VA has blood on its hands. Every day, veterans are dying and going unattended to. But, you know, this is what happens when you have a cultural Marxist regime that is running the country into the fucking ground. These are the priorities they put ahead of everything else. What else are we going to talk about? Ann Caporato. What's going on, Ann Caporato? What's going on, Max? What's going on, Nikki? What's going on, Matt? What's going on, Rumble and Roar? A couple others that are in the chat room, you guys are more than welcome to call on in. And please drop some news on us, drop some details on us, some history that we should know about. Let's get right started with this. I actually have a little bit of history here that I had bookmarked years ago. Not years, sorry. About a year and a half ago. And I had never brought it up because I didn't find a time to do it. But I had just stumbled upon it as it was reblogged again on my dashboard today. On Tumblr. And I want to bring it up, especially Matt, because I think that you'd appreciate it. It's a woman who played witness to history. Witness to history. Talking about Hitler. And talking about the takeover of Germany and the takeover of most of Europe. Okay. Kitty Werthermann survived. Okay, survivor. And we got to talk about this. I want to read this statement of hers. That'll be later on, maybe the second half. But let's hit up some headlines so we can get it all out of the way. Now, here's some cool things I want to talk about. This just goes hand in hand with the whole guns, the gun stuff that we talk about all the time. Now, here is confirmation that Orlando cops were told to stand down for about 15 to 20 minutes. This is off the Washington Standard, okay? Confirmed, Orlando cops told to stand down not to pursue shooter for 15 to 20 minutes. Okay, the testimony of a Belle Isle police officer was given this week, allowing for the first public account of what happened. My God. By God. Hold on a second. Ready for this, Matt? Officer Brandon Cornwall's account of what happened could explain why the death toll was so high. They were told to stand down and not pursue the shooter. According to Cornwall, he was one of the first seven officers on the scene. After hearing reports of shots fired, Cornwall was at the nightclub only 38 seconds later. Some ran toward the building, some stayed back with people running out, he said. There was tons of people running out of the club. I grabbed my assault rifle and ran toward the club. At this point, the shooter is still actively shooting inside. Within only 2 minutes, Cornwall and approximately six other officers had broken a large window and entered the club. There happens to be an OPD lieutenant commander who was there, and he says we've got to go in, said Cornwall. No one disagreed. One of the officers busted out one of those side windows. It was approximately 10 feet tall, and we just went in and went from there. Cornwall said that Mateen was nowhere to be seen. The club was dim, lit with a disco ball and colored lights, and quiet except for the sound of the shooter's gunfire, screams, and cries for help, Cornwall said, as reported by MSN. At the time, he said, we took up tactical positions by the bar standpoint in the middle of the club. He was actively shooting, he said. I can't say if he was targeting us, but he was still shooting in that location where he was at. There was bullet holes in the wall, so he had to shoot through the wall, but I couldn't tell you if he was shooting at us. Cornwall recalled getting orders not to pursue the shooter, to hold their position and wait for SWAT. It would take SWAT a long time to respond. And, of course, as we all know, it took up to about 3 hours to get all this to come to an end. Cornwall explained that he and the other officers obeyed the orders not to stop Mateen, and they held their position for 15 to 20 minutes. Could have been longer, until SWAT team arrived. Cornwall described hearing gunshots and scream for help as they sat there waiting for SWAT. So for everybody out there who hears nutty gun control activists that go and tell you that you should call the police, you know, the police that on any other day of the week they can't stand because they're racist, bigoted, indiscriminate murderers, or actually discriminate murderers. But on this day, call the cops. You don't ever need to be able to have the ability to take your life, your livelihood of yourself, and your family and your friends into your own hands and defend yourself in a situation where lethal force is necessary to survive. Okay? There's no loving this enemy. There's nothing that love is going to do to get through this enemy. And of course, in a situation where seconds count, 5 to 10 minutes is lethal. 2 minutes is lethal. In a game when seconds count, whether that's somebody breaks into a house that you're in and all that separates you from them is a staircase, you really have time for 5 minutes when they're at the bottom of the staircase? Does anybody have time for a 15 to 20 minute wait for SWAT and then that didn't even rectify the situation? Think about that. Really think about that when you're out there campaigning for something as mindless as wanting to disarm everybody because you think it might take lethal weapons coupled with the intent to take lives at no matter the cost from criminals. Oh, you fucking freak. I just, shit, I got water all over myself. Thank God it was a small cup. I feel like the wedding singer's brother-in-law. I don't want to be known as the brother-in-law of the town's nut job. I got enough problems of my own. Oh, shit. I got water all over myself. Well, as Matt goes and gets me a towel, and we never speak of this again, because this is supposed to be water in a bottle. I just violated my own rule. But you know what? No one else speaks for an hour by themselves, and I need to keep the vocal cords nice and wet and moist. So, you know, that's what happens. Just dab it. Here, soak it up with the show's notes. I deserve to be shamed for this. Let's see what's going on in the chat room. Moonlit Matt, my question is, how many people died during those 20 minutes? And how many died when SWAT got involved? That is a great question. That's a great question. Rumble and Roar agrees, so does Nikki. Ann Caparato says, lubricate my throat for optimum yodeling technique. Yeah, yodeling.
He's choking that cum.
Yeah, thanks for putting the roll of paper right in front of the camera. Anybody that's able to check out that clip, if you're listening to the podcast, go to the video clip. I always provide the link in the description, and check out this part of the show when Matt put the thing in front of the camera. But that's one thing, 15 to 20 minutes. Now let's couple it with this. Now, we read off Representative Charlie Rangel's quote as to why people like him need protection. They need protection. Why people like us, we don't need guns. We don't need to be able to be protected. They, on the other hand, do. They're more important than us. Society would never go on without, you know, about 600 or so raging lunatic asshole nincompoops telling everybody how to live according to some kind of cultish ideology that they belong to. Okay? That, yeah, society, mankind would cease to exist if the couple hundred people, lawmakers and policymakers that work for this federal government were to somehow disappear. Yeah, we need them more than anybody else. Get the fuck out of here. So, listen to this. This is from JeffJacoby.com. More firepower than the Marines. Federal civilian agencies are amassing guns and ammo. This is from June 26th. Now, we were following this back a couple of years ago, okay? Especially right around before and after the time of the Boston Marathon bombing, when we were checking out what all of the alphabet agencies around the country were doing with their guns. You know, DHS and the IRS stocking up on how many billion rounds of ammunition and guns. And, of course, after Obamacare was passed and the IRS has to start doing a little bit more law enforcement, they, of course, became armed to the teeth. Now, we're not allowed. We're shunned. But, of course, government, arms of government, of the federal Leviathan, they're able to do this. Listen to this. America's gun culture has been a subject of intense interest and controversy for years, with concerns frequently raised about shadowy militias, paramilitary extremists, and unstable zealots in possession of alarming quantities of explosives and firearms. Amid the current din over assault weapons and body armor, consider one domestic organization's fearsome arsenal of military-style equipment. In the space of 8 years, the group amassed a stockpile of pistols, shotguns, semi-automatic rifles, along with ample supplies of ammunition, liquid explosives, gun scopes, and suppressors. In its cache as well are night vision goggles, gas cannons, plus armored vests, drones, and surveillance equipment. Between 2006 and 2014, this organization spent nearly $4.8 million to arm itself, yet its aggressive weapons buildup has drawn almost no public attention. Does all this firepower belong to a jihadist terror cell, a right-wing hate group, a vicious urban gang? None of the above. It's the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. an agency of the U.S. Department of Agriculture that has built up such a formidable collection of munitions. And far from being an outlier, it is one of a dozen federal agencies that spends lavishly on guns, ammunition, and military-style equipment. Did you hear that? The Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service spent $5 million between 2006 and 2014 on pistols, shotguns, semi-automatic rifles, ammunition, liquid explosives, gun scopes, and suppressors, night vision goggles, gas cannons, armored vests, drones, surveillance equipment. The Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. Talk about Tet Offensive. Talk about Tet Offensive, man. Listen to this. Department of Veterans Affairs, $11.7 million. This is total money spent on military equipment from 2006 to 2014. The IRS, $10.7 million. Animal and Plant, we already told that, $4.8 million. Bureau of Public Debt. The Bureau of Public Debt, $2.8 million. National Oceanic, Atmospheric, and Administration, $1.2 million. FDA has $815,000 worth of guns. Social Security Administration, $417,000 worth of weapons. Department of Education, imagine that. Department of Education, $413,000 worth of military spending. The Smithsonian, $309,000. National Institute of Standards and Technology, $262,000. Small Business Administration, $76,000. And Railroad Retirement Board, $44,000. Just trying to make sure that all those railroad robberies finally come to an end, as they have not ceased since the Wild West. Since the West was wild, when in fact it was probably the most self-governing place on earth. Seriously, my God, the Smithsonian. So remember, everybody, whenever you can't get a hold of the police in time to save anybody's lives that may need assistance, just call the Smithsonian. Hopefully they'll show up faster than the police or SWAT teams. So that's something to hang your hat on. Call the Smithsonian. Matt, how's your day at work, man? How's your finger?
It's all right, I suppose.
Is it getting better?
Yeah, it feels weird, so it's got to be getting better.
Can you bend it at all?
Yeah, a little bit.
It's good.
It is good. I drink a lot of milk, bro.
Well, milk is good for your bones.
It is.
So let's just hope that it's setting in the right place. So
of course it is.
So you don't have a pirate finger.
You fucking finger blast someone, give them an extra little tickle, bro.
Yo, what if this... What about this? What if your finger is now deformed in a way where it is the optimal shaped finger for fooling around with a woman or anything like that, that you become renowned for this piece of equipment?
That's fine. I'll open up a service.
What kind of a service? That would be an escort service, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, no. You know there are people who actually, they're massage services that specialize.
Yeah, they give you naked massages.
Yeah, but they specialize in making girls squirt.
Really?
Yeah, because they, especially the girls that have never ejaculated before, and we're speaking scientifically here. This is not raunchy. They claim that head to toe massages are actually very, very are needed, especially if you're trying to induce it from somebody who's never ejaculated before, and special type of massaging around the genitals, the area of the genitals, okay, and like working out little adhesions and knots and all that. And then supposedly it doesn't happen in the first whatchamacallit, massage. But over a series of massages, they start getting closer and closer to the point where then it's just explosive.
That's pretty cool.
You should check it out. You should check out. Go on Google and type in like squirting.
Or I can just
squirt massage.
Stick my big finger inside of them to make them squirt.
I guess you can do that too. But you know, there's something about
it's
massage.
A pretty big finger, bro.
Oh Jesus. Where are we going? I have some cool articles for later on. Let's see, we have some more here. I'll do this this story about Hitler after the 7 o'clock break. 7:30 break. All right, so we did cops stand down in Orlando. More firepower than the Marines. We didn't do this. Did you hear Vince Scully dismantling socialism on the air?
I think so. Yeah, I did. I think I did. He's a good man.
Bless Vince Scully. He was with the Dodgers since they were in Brooklyn. He is a sports icon, and he is in his final year. And listen to what he said during this Dodgers and Milwaukee Brewers game. I think last week or the week before. This was fantastic.
Socialism failing to work as it always does, this time in Venezuela. You talk about giving everybody something free and all of a sudden there's no food to eat. And who do you think is the richest person in Venezuela? The daughter of Hugo Chavez. Hello. Anyway, 0-2.
And there you go. There's a man who is just, he is a piece of a generation that we need to be resurrected back from the dead so bad. He's just one piece of a generation that we need so bad that we need to have them come back and smack the fuck out of all of us. That's what we need. We all need smacks across the face. How dare we do this? Oh, so that's Vin Scully. So I want to bring this up again. I want to hear what people like Max and people have to say. So call in. Zen Live TV is the Skype. We're going back to the express.co.uk. An EU army, is it on the way? A grand republic, a grand army of the republic. Okay, think about Star Wars.
Yeah.
The clone army. Now, I'm going to read this a little bit. The EU cannot rely on NATO and needs new defense policy, says Brussels chief. According to a new foreign policy document from Brussels-based institution to be handed to the EU leaders, next week, a credible European defense is also essential to preserve good relations with the U.S. Hey, Max, you're joining us live for the first time in a long time. First of all, welcome back.
Thank you.
And second of all, have you heard about this potential, first of all, super European super state that is being rumored to be in the works, and then also this European, this grand European army that is now being spoken about?
Yeah, I think I heard about that a while back. The Poles leaked this upcoming agreement. Yeah, Balthazar is worried about the EU as well.
Yeah.
So the Poles once again feared the Germans taking away their military, because the last two times that happened, it did not go well. Or actually, it's probably happened 5 times that the Germans between Prussia and the Holy Roman Empire conquered or tried to conquer Poland.
Say, what do you think about the? Now, I had brought this up yesterday. Michael Savage had said on the air a couple of days ago, and what do you think about the validity of this claim that what Angela Merkel has done pretty much achieved almost all of the dreams of Adolf Hitler without ever firing a shot?
It's just Hitler had the wrong battle plan. But it seems like the EU comptrollers and technocrats succeeded. They played the long game. It was about patience for the National Socialists to to get their way. I think the greatest irony, and it was one of the things that Brexit, the movie, have you seen it?
No.
There's this great scene that so the British, after the war, they voted in the Labour Party. They got out. They got rid of Winston Churchill and the Conservatives. They got the Labour Party back in. And they adopted basically National Socialism. And because Western Germany was under the purview of the Americans, and actually an Austrian economist, who I forget his name right now, but he removed all the price controls overnight that the National Socialist Party had established. And about, six months later, things stabilized and prices started going down, and the German economic miracle happened. And the same thing can be said of Japan. And then 40 years later, they voted in, after the Cold War ends, they vote in, socialists. And it's been a 30-year recession in Japan, and the EU is totally stagnant, and their currency is failing. And that was a really interesting lesson from history, that the British actually impaired themselves more than the Germans, who used the wealth, used the decadence that they won in actually getting conquered by the Americans and getting a free market system imposed upon them. They eventually became decadent and then voted the socialists back in, and we're in the situation we're in now.
Isn't it amazing to see the tables turn over and over again? It's on the same track. It's the same fucking table, but it keeps turning, and we keep people. That's the worst part about all this. That if you call yourself a progressive in this day and age, I always feel like you feel the concept there. The trick is in trying to get yourself to understand that you're not progressing you're progressing forward, yeah, at all costs and in spite of the past. You progress forward and you never look behind you ever. So that's probably why so many people think that the situations we're facing today, the ideas that are being proposed today, both on the right and the left, whatever it is, that people think these are new, great, common sense ideas, but they just have absolutely no historical perspective, so they don't understand how much the world has had to recover from these same ideas, how many times in the past. It's unbelievable. It's like, how many times do we have to recover from these bad ideas? Because it has to happen every couple of decades or so. Or a century. So, I mean, that's very, very, very interesting to see all this happen. Anything else you want to add to the show, my man?
I think you replied to that post, that question I got, where I had thrown out the statistics of some Western European countries and comparing the murder rates between the U.S., if you were to exclude gang violence, is very comparable to other Western European countries. And somebody accused me of manipulating statistics.
Yeah. Using
them.
Yeah, using them. That's using them is manipulating them.
Yeah. So I'm trying to look through that post now. I just thought it was interesting. I tried not to turn it into an ad hominem attack. But I went to the guy's blog, or whoever they are's blog, and there's nothing but furry porn. And so it's like, where does your analysis of statistics come from,
dude,
all of a sudden? And when did you suddenly start caring about the gun control issue that you're going to criticize me for? And anybody who didn't understand that we were comparing two somewhat dissimilar things didn't have a reading comprehension level above the second grade to begin with. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let me just put something up on the screen for a second here. Now, we all know about DashCon, that failed Tumblr convention. Now, I was not even using Tumblr that much back then, but I saw this disaster happen when it happened. And it was the most hilarious thing, where it was just pretty much an empty room with a little bit of a ball pit, and it was a complete failure. greetings from DashCon. And when you look at all these DashCon photos, these are the people that you argue economics with every day. I mean, these are them. These are the wig-wearing, crazy cosplayers that don't know anything about anything. They believe that they're cartoons. And they're arguing with other people about they're making claims about history and economics. And we're supposed to bend over and say, oh, well, you must know because you're dressed like a Yu-Gi-Oh character. You must know. You know, so as far as I always keep that in mind whenever I get just actually, I don't get a lot of messages on Tumblr, but whenever I get some people to try to start it up, I just think of these. I think of these losers, and that's what they are. That's what all these people are.
One more thing I want to mention, throwing into the gun debate, based Heisenberg.
Yeah.
And Fresno, we're asking 149. We're asking about the lead that one of the guns used in the Bataclan terrorist attack actually originated in Operation Fast and Furious.
Yes.
And I discovered that source, if you would like to talk about that for a moment. That's
I saw that, and I put that aside just as I emailed it to myself. Just as I was heading over here, I saw that Ben had shared it. You want to read it? You want to read any main parts of it?
So what I gathered from it is that, so in the U.S., this is possible because we can trace the ownership of a firearm using the bound book records, which is basically a gun registry. The federal government doesn't keep it. And so it's not a federal registry, allegedly, because the gun store keeps it. And that's one thing I tell people about registration. Yeah, all the guns are already registered. They just have to go to the gun store and look it up. And they have to keep those records for 40 years. Anyways, the ATF performed a trace of the firearm used in the Paris attack and found that an individual in Phoenix, Arizona, was the last documented person to own the firearm in question. This individual was investigated and found to be in possession of an unregistered fully automatic machine gun, which, by the way, is a 10-year, $10,000 felony.
My God.
But no action was taken against them. No legal action. This is because they were part of the sting in Fast and Furious, is the lead. Here's a quote.
This has just been confirmed, too.
Yeah, the Phoenix gun owner for the weapon was traced back to was found to have at least two federal firearms violations, selling one illegally and possessing unregistered automatic, but no enforcement or prosecution action was taken against the individual. Matt. So the ATF went out of the way to keep the information under the radar and ensure that the identity was kept quiet because, and this is me adding in, because they didn't want people to find out that guns sold by the U.S. government off the books were used in a terrorist attack.
And where is Eric Holder today? He's probably sunning himself somewhere. He's going to be, he'll be a lobbyist. He'll make millions of dollars for the rest of his life. Eric Holder, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. Well, Max, thank you for that. We should actually really track that and keep tabs on that, because if that doesn't come to the surface and people aren't talking about that, we got to start screaming a little bit louder.
Well, I just have no idea how a gun could get across the Atlantic that way without the U.S. government having some idea about it.
That's also interesting to think about.
You know. I guess there's big shipping going back and forth.
Once those guns are lost in Central and South America, who knows how they fucking get out? Mm-hmm. You know, it's probably on a shipping crate somewhere in an unmarked box, and they had somebody just taken on the take at some kind of a loading dock in the Mediterranean,
right?
Or North Africa.
Well, yeah, I think that it still might have come through the Middle East again. Right. And a lot of those AKs, which I think that they used to Arsenal, which is a Bulgarian make, you know, they have a contract with the Iraqi security forces. And so Iraqi security forces is running turning tail in the field of battle, dropping their guns. And then ISIS gets them and passes them on to, you know, they can't control the people coming across the Mediterranean. They probably can't control the guns either.
Well, thanks for the call, Max. This was a great time to have you back on again.
Thank you.
And have a good one. Definitely, man. Talk to you soon. It's our good buddy. Good buddy, Max from Colorado. Fighting a good cause there. He's not so much a patriot, but he is a man who loves liberty, freedom, and common sense. Oh, you know what? Let's read this, because we had a couple of references to Europe there, and I think this would be a nice little walk down history. So here's a picture. She survived Hitler and wants to warn America. Okay. Now, these are the words of Kitty Werthermann. Okay. So we're going to start from the beginning. Matt, you're going to like this. It might put something out there. I cannot tell you that Hitler took Austria by tanks and guns. It would distort history. If you remember the plot of The Sound of Music, the V on the Trapp family escaped over the Alps rather than submit to the Nazis. Kitty wasn't so lucky. Her family chose to stay in her native Austria. She was 10 years old, but bright and aware, and she was watching. We elected him by a landslide, 98% of the vote, she recalls. She wasn't old enough to vote in 1938, approaching her 11th birthday, but she remembers. Here's another quote. Everyone thinks that Hitler just rolled in with his tank and took Austria by force. Typo negative. Beautiful, but just a little too loud. Everyone thinks that Hitler just rolled in with his tanks and took Australia by force. Not so. Hitler was welcomed to Austria. In 1938, this is another quote. 1938, Austria was in deep depression. Nearly one-third of our workforce was unemployed. We had 25% inflation and 25% bank loan interest rates. Farmers and business people were declaring bankruptcy daily. Young people were going from house to house begging for food. Not that they didn't want to work. There simply weren't any jobs. My mother was a Christian woman and believed in helping people in need. Every day we cooked a big kettle of soup and baked bread to feed those poor, hungry people, about 30 daily. We looked to our neighbor on the north, Germany, where Hitler had been in power since 1933, she recalls. We had been told that they didn't have employment or unemployment or crime, that they had high standard of living. Nothing was ever said about persecution of any group, Jewish or otherwise. We were led to believe that everyone in Germany was happy. We wanted the same way of life in Austria. We were promised that a vote for Hitler would mean the end of unemployment and help for the family. Hitler also said that businesses would be assisted and farmers would get their farms back. 98% of the population voted to annex Austria to Germany and have Hitler for our ruler. We were overjoyed, remembers Kitty. And for 3 days, we danced in the streets and had candlelight parades. The new government opened up big field kitchens, and everyone was fed. After the election, German officials were appointed. And, like a miracle, we suddenly had law and order. 3 or 4 weeks later, everyone was employed. The government made sure that a lot of work was created through the Public Works Service. Hitler decided we should have equal rights for women. Before this, it was a custom that married Austrian women did not work outside the home. An able-bodied husband would be looked down on if he couldn't support his family. Many women in the teaching professions were elated that they could retain the jobs they previously had been required to give up for marriage. Then we lost religious education for kids. Our education was nationalized. I attended a very good public school. The population was predominantly Catholic, so we had religion in our schools. The day we elected Hitler, March 13, 1938, I walked into my schoolroom to find the crucifix was replaced by Hitler's picture hanging next to a neo-Nazi flag. You're having fun. You love this so far. You look pumped up.
Great leader.
Oh my God. I walked into my schoolroom to find the crucifix replaced by Hitler's picture hanging next to a Nazi flag. Our teacher, a very devout woman, stood up and told the class we wouldn't pray or have religion anymore. Instead, we sang Deutschland, Deutschland, yes. Über alles.
Yes, and we hailed Hitler.
And had physical education. Sunday became National Youth Day with compulsory attendance. Parents were not pleased. No, think about all this shit.
Oh, dude, it's crazy.
Think about what's happening.
Yeah, I know.
Parents were not pleased about the sudden change in curriculum. They were told that they did not send us. They were told that if they did not send us, they would receive a stiff letter of warning for the first time. The second time, they would be fined the equivalent of $300. And the third time, they would be subject to jail. And then things got worse. The first 2 hours consisted of political indoctrination. The rest of the day, we had sports. As time went along, we loved it. Oh, we had so much fun and got our sports equipment for free. We would go home and gleefully tell our parents about the wonderful time we had. My mother was very unhappy, remembers Kitty. When the next term started, she took me out of public school and put me in a convent. I told her she couldn't do that, and she told me that someday when I grew up, I would be grateful. There was a very good curriculum, but hardly any fun. No sports and no political indoctrination. I hated it at first, but felt I could tolerate it. Every once in a while on holidays, I went home. I would go back to my old friends and ask what was going on and what they were doing. Their loose lifestyle was very alarming to me. They lived without religion. By that time, unwed mothers were glorified for having a baby for Hitler. It seems strange to me that our society changed so suddenly. As time went along, I realized what a great deed my mother did so that I wasn't exposed to that kind of humanistic philosophy. In 1939, the war started, and a food bank was established. All food was rationed and could only be purchased using food stamps. At the same time, a full employment law was passed, which meant that if you didn't work, you didn't get a ration card. And if you didn't have a card, you starved to death. Women who stayed at home to raise their families didn't have any marketable skills and often had to take jobs, but more suited for men. Soon after this, the draft was implemented. And remember, as of 2018, women are now required to sign up for selective service.
They're now legible.
It was compulsory for young people, male and female, to give 1 year to the labor corps, remembers Kitty. During the day, the girls worked on the farms, and at night they returned to their barracks for military training, just like the boys. They were trained to be anti-aircraft gunners and participated in the signal corps. After the labor corps, they were not discharged, but they were used in the front lines. When I go back to Austria to visit my family and friends, most of these women are emotional cripples because they were not equipped to handle the horrors of combat. 3 months before I turned 18, I was severely injured in an air raid attack. I nearly had a leg amputated, so I was spared having to go into labor corps and into military service. When the mothers had to go out into the workforce, the government immediately established child care centers. Think about that. What is the U.S. government getting into now, aside from Common Core, the education, child care, encouraging single motherhood? It's exactly what we're doing here. Food stamps, state dependency, political indoctrination. That's all being done on elementary and high school level, but even more so in the colleges, which are actually kowtowing to kids who are failing their courses because it's interfering with their activism schedules. you could take your children ages 4 weeks old to school age and leave them around the clock 7 days a week under the total care of government. The state raised a whole generation of children. There were no motherly women to take care of the children, just people highly trained in child psychology. By this time, no one talked about equal rights. We knew we had been had. Before Hitler, we had very good medical care, Many American doctors trained at the University of Vienna. After Hitler, healthcare was socialized, free for everyone. Doctors were salaried by the government. The problem was, since it was free, the people were going to the doctors for everything. When a good doctor arrived at his office at 8 a.m., 40 people were already waiting. At the same time, the hospitals were full. If you needed elective surgery, you had to wait a year or two for your turn. There was no money for research, as it was poured into socialized medicine. Research at the medical schools literally stopped, so the best doctors left Austria and emigrated to other countries. As for healthcare, our tax rates went up to 80% of our income. Newlyweds immediately received a $1,000 loan from the government to establish a household. We had big programs for families. All daycare and education were free. High schools were taken over by the government and college tuition was subsidized. Everyone was entitled to free handouts such as food stamps, clothing, and housing. We had another agency designed to monitor business. My brother-in-law, EPA, my brother-in-law owned a restaurant that had square tables. Government official told him that he had to replace them with round tables because people might bump themselves on the corners. When they said that they had to have an additional bathroom facilities. This was a small dairy business with a snack bar. He couldn't meet all of the demands. Soon he went out of business. If the government owned the large business and not many small ones, existed, it could be in control. We had consumer protection too. That we were told how to shop and what to buy. Free enterprise was essentially abolished. We had planning agency specially designed for farmers. The agents would go to farms, count livestock, and then tell the farmers what to produce and how to produce it. In 1944, I was a student teacher in a small village in the Alps. The villagers were surrounded by mountain passes, which in the winter were closed off with snow, causing people to be isolated. So people intermarried and offspring were sometimes retarded. When I arrived, I was told there were 15 mentally retarded adults, but they were all useful and good for manual work. I knew one named Vincent very well. He was a janitor of the school. One day, I looked out the window and saw Vincent and others getting into a van. I asked my superior where they were going. She said to an institution where the state health department would teach them a trade and to read and write. The families were required to sign papers with little clause. Signed papers with a little clause that they could not visit for 6 months. They were told visits would interfere with the program and might cause homesickness. As time passed, letters started to dribble back saying these people died a natural, merciful death. The villagers were not fooled. We suspected that what was happening. Those people left in excellent physical health and all died within 6 months. We called this euthanasia. Next came gun registration. People were getting injured by guns. Hitler has said that the real way to catch criminals, we still had a few, was by matching serial numbers on guns. Most civilians were law-abiding and dutifully marched to the police station to register their firearms. Not long afterwards, the police said that it was best for interest for everyone to turn in their guns. The authorities already knew who had them, so it was futile to comply, to comply voluntarily. No more freedom of speech. Anyone who said something against the government was taken away. We knew many people who were arrested, not only Jews, but also priests and ministers who spoke up. Totalitarianism didn't come quickly. It took 5 years from 1938 to 1943 to realize the full dictatorship in Austria. Had it happened overnight, my countrymen would have fought this to the last breath. Instead, we had creeping gradualism. Now, our only weapons were broom handles. The whole idea sounds almost unbelievable, that the state, little by little, eroded our freedom. This is my eyewitness account. It's true. Those of us who sailed past the Statue of Liberty came to a country of unbelievable freedom and opportunity. America is truly the greatest country in the world. Don't let freedom slip away. After America, there is no place left to go. Kitty Werthermann. I will keep that on hand and read it when necessary, and I will share it as many times as necessary.
Good article, Kit Harington.
It was a talk she had. Kitty Werthermann.
Kit Harington.
So just remember that. You think it can't happen to you. It's happening to us. Everything she just said right there is happening right now. We are either in advanced stages or early stages. It's happening. So be awake. Be awake. Study your history. Because if you study your history, you're already smarter than most of the people that run this fucking government. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Talk to you guys tomorrow night. It's Friday night. It's going to be a chill Friday. Hope to have you with us. Coming up next, 3 drink minimum. No. Quarter life crisis. I thought it was Monday. It is Thursday. Quarter life crisis. Then at 9 o'clock, we're back on at 9 to talk about other cool stuff. Things that are non-political. Going to be good. Be well, everybody.